Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Sunday, a day to worship. Worship a small egg-shaped ball.
Oh no, he drops the ball.
You've got to respect the ball.
Long live the weekend. Long live rugby league.
Oh, you've got to love your rugby league.
Triple M, Sunday Sin Bin.
And a very good afternoon. Happy Easter, everybody, right across the Triple M network. This is, of course, a Sunday Sin Bin. We're going to be talking NRL with the boys very shortly. Before we do, results so far: Panthers 46, Manly 6, Souths 38, Dogs 0. Storm 40, Broncos 6, Sharks 48, Cowboys 10, Raiders 20, Titans 4. Now, today we have Knights, Dragons, Roosters, Warriors. Tomorrow, Parramatta versus the Tigers. Three teams haven't won a game yet: the Cowboys, the Dogs, and Manly. For the Dogs, it's their worst start since 1971. We'll talk more about all that sort of thing. Of course, Penrith have played four and won four. So if you're listening at the foot of the mountains, congratulations to you. Let's welcome the boys in. Paul Kent, nice to see you again, old mate.
Nice to see you, Anthony. Glad you're back from your little vacation up on the tropics.
Yeah.
Weekend away. You bag us for not working.
Yeah.
Four rounds and you're going for a holiday yourself.
I had to come back. I listened to you three without me and it sounded like fair dinkum, amateur hour in Broken Hill. That's fair dinkum, what it sounded like. Hoops, welcome to you too.
Good afternoon, Anthony. Good to see you back and in full flight.
Had a nice morning with the kids with the chalky eggs.
Yeah, on fire. Happy Easter to all the mums and dads and kids and everybody out there. Hope everybody's getting their fill from the Easter Bunny. Mm. And we'll be discussing all matters pertinent to rugby league on this program today.
I've got some eggs for you guys today, but in my wife's culture in Portugal, they boil the eggs and then they dye the eggs. So I've actually got you some real eggs, but they're painted, the shell's painted. Bit of protein for lunch today. Gordon Tallis in our brand new Caxton Street studios. G'day to you.
Good afternoon, guys. How are we?
Fantastic. How's little Billy this morning? Did you get him some Easter eggs?
Yeah, he's. I got to work 3 hours early because he's on a sugar high. It's
right.
The first time I got here at 10 o'clock this morning. Just come up the top and started reading the papers. Get out of the house, mate. Yeah, chocolate. Great. At 2 years old, he's climbing walls.
Well, he is your kid. He is your kid, Gordy. All right, boys, let's talk a bit of footy. There's a lot of sides going absolutely just like busted. And there's three of them that come to mind, obviously. Cowboys, obviously Manly. Obviously, the Bulldogs. So these three clubs are just absolutely struggling. The Cowboys, well, I didn't think they'd be as bad as they've gone. Let's open up the discussion. I'll bring you in, Gordy, because you're a boy from North Queensland. What's going on with the Cowboys?
Oh, well, they've played the last couple of weeks without Jason Tamalolo and Michael Morgan. That's one. And, you know, they've had a couple of great players, and Matt Scott and Jonathan Thurston are retiring after you lose dominant players like that. It's really hard to find someone to fill the bill, and they've got a new coach, and he challenged them after round one, and so far I'm not seeing that the players that they got there have responded. There's a mixture of old guys that are losing it a little bit, and the young guys just aren't stepping up to the plate. So, and those middle of the road guys, like Cohen Hess, those guys that should be better and driving the new standards, well, they're not doing that as well. So the Cowboys are in a lot of trouble.
It must be an awful realisation if you're the coach to see the young kids who are the future of the club aren't quite getting there.
Mm.
And you're starting to think to yourself, well, hang on, we're probably back the wrong horse here with these guys because they're not coming through like they should be coming through. I think there's no buy-in whatsoever there appears from the players. Some of their efforts I thought were pretty poor. And I think that that's a concern for a new coach, that already he's getting players who just aren't buying into what he's trying to teach, who are not committed during the game. The one thing you should never have to question a professional sportsman about is their effort. That's the one thing should be a given. Not every time your skills are on, you might miss a pass or miss a tackle, whatever, but your effort should be there. It should never be questioned.
There were long periods of that game where defensively you're spot on, Kenny. They look like strangers. And in the bigger picture, you can, as Gordy touched on before, if you trace it all the way back to that grand final appearance they made in 2017, I reckon that was a bit of a false dawn because Michael Morgan went on this phenomenal run of form and in combination with Jason Tomalolo and a couple of other gun players at the time, essentially dragged the side into the finals and then all the way to the grand final. I think they needed results to go their way in the last round of the competition. Like they needed, I forget if it was the Dragons or who it was, but they needed someone to lose so that they finished in eighth. And then from there, they were able to go on a run. But since then, they finished 14th last year. They finished 14th in 2019. And it was 13th the year after that. And it's all coincided with the retirement of Jonathan Thurston. You go back to Newcastle days when Joey Johns retired and you look how long it took that club to get over that. I think for whatever reason, the recruitment decisions that they've made have backfired. On top of that, they let Kalyn Ponga go and join the Newcastle Knights. They let Brandon Smith go and join the Melbourne Storm. And they let Viliami Kikau go and join the Penrith Panthers. So there's been a series of really bad decisions up there.
Well, boys, before we go any further, Jake Granville, who is probably one of the more senior players in the Cowboys outfit, he had this to say about the effort last night.
Yeah, it feels pretty bad, to be honest, mate. Just defensively, we're not resilient enough. Yeah, we're coughing up the ball there, but we're not jumping the fence, and defensively, yeah, we're just soft at the moment, a bit disconnected. You can't leak that many points in a game. It's far too much. Yeah, just in that area, we've just got to be a lot more consistent.
Well, there it is, Hoopsie said, we're disconnected, and that's what you said. It's like they don't even know each other.
They missed a lot of tackles last night, their edges in particular. The Sharks were cutting them open at will. And look, congratulations to Cronulla. It was a gutsy win from them. Their coach has been under all sorts of pressure. We're going to have Johnny Morris on the program a little later on in this hour. But Will Kennedy was fantastic at fullback. Matty Moylan turned the clock back and had probably his best game in a Cronulla jumper and for a number of seasons. So some good signs from the Sharkies. But for the Cowboys, I'll tell you what, Maroon, I wouldn't want to be up at that joint at the moment.
Well, and the
well,
other
then how do they fix it?
I think you got to.
I don't think it's a quick fix, Gordy.
I think the problem sometimes, Gordy, with what you do, it's not a quick fix. What you got to do sometimes, Gordon, and you would know this. When you play with Brian Smith under him, Brian Smith was very good at coaching young players, and his whole coaching philosophy was about building your skills and your fundamentals. Wayne Bennett's a very similar coach, and I think sometimes new coaches can get a little bit, they probably think they're a little bit further down the track than what they are. Mm. And so they come in, okay, I've been coaching as an assistant elsewhere, I haven't done this, or I've been coaching in lower grades when they were the head coach. They think now they're in charge of the NRL team. It's like, okay, now I'm sitting behind the wheel of the Formula One car. But they still haven't got the fundamentals right. And so some of them, like the Canterbury mistakes last night, I thought Canterbury were really brave. I thought they really tried hard, but their mistakes are just fundamental mistakes. That silly passes and passes getting thrown out of the sidelines and drop balls. And the Cowboys are the same. They're just making fundamental mistakes. They're making really bad reads in defence. There's a lack of effort, I would say, in defence. Well, they're the first guys you've got to get rid of. You give them kick up the bum or you get rid of them. Like I think Todd Payton's got to really just peel it back. And just coach, just really coach. Not get technical or fancy. Just guys, we're gonna play. I really love what Nathan Brown did with the Warriors, where because of the disrupted off-season that they've had, and the late inclusions of a couple of players at the club, he said for the first month they've just gone out and played really just basically stick it under your arm and run hard. No, there's nothing fancy. There's not a lot of set players. There's not a lot of bells and whistles to what they're doing. It's all very basic football, the Warriors, and they've been effective. They're getting over the advantage line, they're going forward. And so they're being effective. I think some of the other teams, they've just got to get back to simple football.
Boys, and the real dominant players, they can actually hurt you. So when I was playing with someone like Alan Langer, he got the ball whenever he wanted, say 70 touches a game. Thurston would have been the same. He takes your thinking away when you're fatigued because Alfie gets you out of the trouble.
Yeah,
and now at the Cowboys, without that guy in you, and there's no Michael Morgan and Drinkwater and Clifford, those guys are still learning it. And, you know, Val Holmes, we don't know whether he's a winger or a fullback, so he's not that guy that's going to think you out of problems either. And then there's effort. And to me, rugby league's simple. If you watch the Melbourne Storm, if you watch Penrith, if you watch all the good sides, they just have more jerseys in the frame. Melbourne Storm the other night had more jerseys around the football, and it's simple because they go there just in case they need it. When Penrith, when Kickow, he got up 40 metres and run across the other side of the field to put the hand under Ollum's ball. You know, like he just went over there and, you know, and he made a tackle after getting knocked out. He was going to milk it. That's the effort that the good sides do. They're not getting beaten on ability. They, you know, like then that's what's wrong with the Cowboys and those sides down the bottom, because there's no reward for their effort. And when you play at the good clubs and you're getting tired, the Thurstons, the Clearys, the Johnses, the, those type of players, they get your points. So the scoreboard starts ticking in your favour and you're getting a reward for your effort. The poor clubs don't get it, so they tend to stop because there's no reward. There's no paycheck at the end of the day.
Going back to your question, Gordy, which is a bang-on question, how do you fix it? Last year, you know, we heard all sorts of rumblings coming out of the Cowboys at the beginning of the year that the players weren't happy. It was an unhappy playing group. Paul Green was too much of a hard taskmaster. And they were hard conversations to have because Greeny had led the club to a maiden premiership in 2015 when JT kicked that field goal, one of the best GFs of all time. And then he'd taken him to the grand final in 17 as well. But, you know, all the noise out of the place was, oh, we need a new voice. You know, Greeny's things have gone pear-shaped. It's become too stale. And so they get Todd Payton in, and I think a lot of us thought that, well, that was supposed to be the fix, was getting a new voice in. But from what we've seen over the opening month, have they gone backwards?
Well, I think we spoke about it in round one, and Paul liked when he challenged Tamalolo. I said I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Because there's only one way, and when you challenge a big guy, if he decides not to play for you, you're in trouble.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And I think he challenged the wrong guy. And I know he put everybody on notice, but no one's responded. Not one person responded to his call.
No one
picked up his call. And he did that in round one. What is it now, round four?
Yeah.
And they're going backwards in a hurry.
Boys, what about, we had this, there's been a lot of discussion last night and this morning about the future of Josh Maguire at the club. Before we go any further, let me play you some audio of the new coach, Cowboys, Todd Payton, talking about that and other issues.
Yeah, we've had a conversation with his management, and if he's able to secure his future beyond next year, we're not going to stand in his way.
Yeah, but he'll be there for this year.
Things can change quickly, but at the moment, yeah.
Was that a conversation that was initiated by the club or by Josh's management?
Both.
Well, Paul, things can change quickly is the equivalent of he's got the full support of the board.
Yeah, it is. Look, there's no doubt if he can, his manager would be out there now trying to rustle up an offer. Look, Josh Maguire was quite critical of his team a week earlier after the game about lack of effort and execution, all that.
Soft underbelly,
yep. So he was quite critical. So clearly he's not happy there. Clearly, and he's a proud player. He's an international player. So he's reached the highest levels. So I think his manager would be on the phone now, certainly, rustling up something. If something comes through, his chance of going. The problem's going to be salary cap.
He almost, like, there was just all the talk over the summer that he was in dialogue with the Dragons. He's obviously got a history with Anthony Griffin, who coached him when both of them were at the Brisbane Broncos. So I think those conversations are ongoing. And the difficulty is, I think Josh is on pretty good dough. So the Dragons are going to have to figure a way of how they get the Cowboys to chip in for this year. And then beyond that, how they work out the money for
and
next
season. And it's strange because he's an effort player.
Yeah, I know.
He's one of those guys that squeeze it and he goes after him 100 miles an hour. And I know that he's getting long in the tooth and, you know, when is it time to retire? Well, the young kids tell you that when you're out there playing, you know. But I think he's one of those guys that has, you know, rolled up the sleeves for the Cowboys in recent years.
Well, to your point there, Gordon, I was having a look at the numbers on Fox Sports Lab earlier from last night's game. He's the only Cowboys forward who ran for over 100 metres last night, whereas Cronulla had half a dozen. Aaron Woods, Braden Hamlin, Ueli, young Teague Wilton playing out in the back row. There was half a dozen Sharks forwards, whereas for the Cowboys, it was only Josh Maguire. So,
yeah. Okay.
And that's 35 tackles on that as well.
That's it. Yeah. Anthony, just as we switch tack quickly, there is a little bit of breaking news here. Matt from Collaroy, long-time listener of the program, has been in touch. He said, great to hear Anthony back on the air today. Mm-hmm. He might be a cash-hungry, peroxide-tinted Jamie Lee Curtis wannabe, but his return has this show right back on the rails. Mm-hmm. I salute you, Anthony.
Well, and nice to have you listening, Matt. I did hear through your brother Joey from Bronte, that you have since. I don't know if you've found your mobile phone or you've bought another mobile phone, but you do have a mobile phone again. But you're not going to tell anyone you have a mobile phone, and that suits me fine because I would rather deal with Sister Trish from Collaroy. So good to have you listening, brother. Boys, we'll take a break. And by the way, Cowboys have Tigers next week, and then they have the Dogs. So they've got a couple of games here. They should be able to perhaps win one of those, but who knows? Look, we're going to take a break and come back and talk about the haves and have-nots in rugby league.
The Triple M Sunday Sin Bin. Triple M rocks footy.
Welcome back right across Australia. Once again, we wish everybody a very happy Easter. I got my grandkids at home today. Absolutely beautiful. My wife, Christine's given about half a dozen Easter eggs each and let them go. Tyre Power's huge store-wide super sale. Buy three and get one free on Kumo passenger and SUV tyres. Now, Panthers 46, Manly 6, South 38, Dogs 0, Storm 40, Broncos 6, Sharks 48, Cowboys 10, Raiders 20, Titans 4 is the only one that hasn't blown out. So obviously, boys, a lot of talk in the media in the last 48 hours about one-sided, lopsided scores that we're getting in the NRL, Kenty. And I don't know if we're just not trying to find something to whinge about at the moment.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. A lot of people are putting it down to the new rule interpretations and the effect that's having on the competition. I think what the new rules have done is basically advantage the better teams. It's allowed them to show why they're the better teams. I think the game, the other rules, the slower game artificially kept the scores closer. I think the game's been refereed slightly different now. And I think the better teams are just showing that they're better.
Mm.
And that's what we're seeing at the moment. Some teams, I think, have got really slow pickup on how to get to speed with the way the game's being played now. Some teams just don't have first-grade rosters. That's a worry. But I think that you've got to just wait for it to adjust, and hopefully those teams can hopefully come good.
Yeah, people could wrestle or slow their way or get penalties back into the game. You know, when a side's getting on top, they could just slow you down. And now with the reset, you can't give that away. And it actually hurts you. That's a great change in the rule because there's footy played. Like you'd see when a side's getting on the front foot, they'll just hold them down or they're attacking their line. Yeah. And it'd be five or six penalties on their try line. That's not happening.
Yeah.
So if you've got a weak underbelly and they're coming after you and you're losing grip and they've got the momentum, the scoreboard tends to go in their favour, and that's the rugby league that we all like watching. You've either got to get with them, get down in the trench and keep on going set for set. And, you know, young Tino, he's the only player that I've heard interviewed, and he just says, we got to go until, and hopefully they crack before we do.
Yeah.
And a lot of players are cracking.
Yeah.
Geez, he was enormous last night. Caught in a beaten side. He started in the front row. Had 1,000 carries.
For a young guy, he's setting a standard. And they're the guys, you know. And there's a lot of those young guys that go there and, you know, and they don't wait for something to happen. Wayne Bennett always said there's three types of players. The players that make things happen, those that watch things happen, and those players that don't know what just happened. Which one are you? And there's a few other words in the last one. And then basically, he'd always ask us, which one are you?
Yeah.
You know, so you either get out there and you make things happen or you stand there and watch your mate do it.
Yeah.
And there's too many of those guys now watching and just in case.
Can I ask you this just on Tino, because I know you're one of his biggest fans.
Yep.
The move to start him in the front row last night, and he played massive minutes.
Yep.
Do you worry that at such a young stage of his career, if he starts to, like, is it a risk making him do that every week at this stage? Or?
Well, he's young and he can do it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Yes and no. You know what I mean? Like there's, you know, Jason Tamalolo doesn't seem to be slowing down unless the coach tells. Like there's guys that play, like guys are playing longer now with the sports science and the scientists in our game that everybody's playing 300 games. Everybody is. Soon it'll be 400. You're like, that's the new, no, seriously, like then that'll be the new 300 is 400.
Yeah.
Because everybody plays 300. There's one every year.
Yeah.
So I think that the way he's doing it, he doesn't seem to get tired. And that's what I like. Why do you have to replace guys? If he's out there and he's getting through his work and he's loving every bit of it and he's not shirking and he's not letting his team down, why not leave him out there?
Yeah, well,
and then
certainly
give him a rest through the week, right?
Yeah.
So if he's doing, say, 8Ks or 10Ks, and if he comes off the bench, he's doing 6, why don't you give him 2Ks off at training?
Yep.
Mm.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Well, listen, just to get back on the point here, you blokes.
Yeah.
We were talking about
bring back
that's okay.
Anthony. Bring back
this didn't,
Dan. Hey,
this didn't happen
bring
last week Dan. When Dan Ganame was in the hot seat.
I couldn't work out what the point was last week. You're 1 minute, you're here, then you're over there, then you're taking a break, then you're playing a song.
I think there actually were some points, which mate, was, yeah, a good start for this program.
They called me where I was on holidays and said, can we send the Triple M chopper and get you back there for the last hour? But on the, Paul, what you just said in all of that, you said some sides don't have a first-grade roster.
Yeah.
And on the back of you saying that, do you think we should still be looking at NRL expansion?
Look, I think it's highlighted at the moment. I still think we need to expand. I think the game is considered growth, and it's got to be obviously firstly financially viable to be able to do that. Okay. Now, smarter people than me are going away to figure that out. But I don't think the salary cap's working. I think one of the chief aims of the salary cap is to evenly distribute talent, and it's not evenly distributed, so it's not working in that respect. So I don't know whether, and look, I'll add this, very few people have faith that the salary cap does work and is being properly policed. Everybody in the game always has a bit of a giggle about it. I think there's certainly a clear belief, no matter what club, whether you're the successful clubs or the less than successful clubs, that there are advantages within there that teams getting that shouldn't be getting.
There's also been some shocking mismanagement as well in terms of spending
absolutely.
By clubs on
absolutely.
Players. Bad recruitment decisions, long-term contracts, big money. And when you get it wrong, you've only got to look at down the bottom of the competition ladder at the moment. Most of those clubs have made bad decisions.
All this began for me back when they started to get more diversity on boardrooms. And so to try and get smarter business people and all this into the boardrooms, they went away from football people. And there was a real, if you remember, probably about 10 years, around
it was
the beginning,
Dave Smith.
Around
it was
the beginning
Dave.
Of the commission era, yeah, there was a real push to get business people,
CEOs,
right? And, okay, involved in rugby league.
Mm.
And what we found was that we didn't need more business people. We need more people who understood the business of rugby league.
Mm.
And that's what we lost. We lost a lot of people who understood the business of rugby league. So now we've got these boards who when they appoint a coach, which should be the most certain decision they make, they do it warily now. And they're not everyone's a home run. So then you've got a coach, and no coach comes into a club and says, I'm going to coach very few coaches come in and say, I'm going to coach the players I've got. They all want 3 years to turn over the roster to get in the players they can coach. One of the things I would be saying if I was on a board is, this is your playing group. This is what you've got to coach. And we're not doing that. We're allowing coaches to come in and giving them 2 or 3 years to turn over the roster because they can only apparently coach a certain way and coach a certain player. It just doesn't make sense. And you've got these inept boards who are trying – they're bluffing that they know. And so the bad decisions are starting now and they're going through the club. And so what's happening now is you get these teams, they're just so out of shape. Their salary caps are out of shape. Their roster's out of shape. You just – and it doesn't make sense. And then they don't win games, and they're wondering why, and they're looking at the coach.
Hmm.
And then you do things like Manly. Manly got an incentive bonus in there for Des Hasler, where if he gets the semi-finals next year, he gets extended. If he doesn't, he loses his job. This year, it's irrelevant. All this year will be, with due respect to Des, I'm not going to say that, yeah, but this is what generally happens. If your incentive bonus is for next year and not for this year, that's when you get your contract extended. Why wouldn't you put all your effort into winning next year? If a bloke gets 5 rounds out and you're touch and go whether you're going to make the semis or not, and some bloke's carrying a shoulder he needs reconstruction on, you'd be saying to him, mate, go now, get yourself fit for next year. Last 5 rounds, doesn't matter, mate. We'll find a way to sell that. We'll say, oh, no, it was too bad. He had to go and get reconstruction now. Because this year doesn't matter. It's a dumb move. And that's an amateur-type decision. Clause gets put into contracts from people who don't know the business.
Yeah, and the managers have too much power. If you look at the Cowboys, they got Temalalo and Morgan out. People are writing them off. They're going to get the wooden spoon. The Roosters lost both halves. There's no Boyd Cordner. There's no
Jake Friend.
Who's there? Victor Radley. No Sam Verrills. And they say, write us off. We're still going to be top four.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's where the difference is in the salary caps. And you can't say Roosters are that much smarter. You cannot say that they're that much smarter than every other club to have that depth, because they're all international players. Like, if you ever look, they're all rep players. You know, they've got the ability to go out there and sign 17 rep players.
There is a false economy, which I often say. There's a false economy in the salary cap as well. Players will take less to play at a good club. So that just perpetuates what's going on. The good clubs continue to get good players, because players like the Morris twins are on
250k each.
250k each.
Mm.
Now, there are wingers in bottom four teams who are on that themselves.
Yeah.
And you've got these two there who are, and they've sacrificed a bit of cash because they want a chance to win in a comp together. Mm. And fully respect that. I really admire that they've done that.
Yeah.
But this is what's going on. See, salary caps were always intended to work with a draft. And if you go back to the beginning of the salary cap era, they also did bring in a draft, and it got challenged in court. It got lost in court as a restraint of trade, which they always do. You've got to have agreement with the Players Association that you'll have a draft. And at some point, I think the problem with the Players Association is too many of those guys who got say in there from the successful clubs, and they're the players who financially have been rewarded. If you spoke and had an honest assessment of the entire playing group, and I think you spoke to all the players, they would be more in favour of a draft that would level the talent, because there's a lot of players on minimal money who are playing for ordinary teams who think, well, you know what, chance of actually getting a bit of success here. If we've got a draft and you start bringing a few good players to our club through a draft that we wouldn't normally get in an open market, then we're a chance of actually having success.
So, but Paul, did we not try the draft in rugby league in, I think, 1990?
Terry Hill got drafted by the Roosters when he wanted to play for Wests.
Right.
Warren Ryan was the coach of Wests. He wanted to go out there and play, and the Roosters drafted him. So he challenged it in court, and they won.
And that was the end of the...
That was the end. As I said, you need agreement with the Players Association. The Players Association have to say, we won't challenge it. And that's what, in all of overseas leagues where they have drafts and that, the Players Association have been able to... The leagues have been able to sell to the Players Association that a draft is actually long-term beneficial to the entire code and also to the players. Mm. And so they buy in. And you see... So that's why you see basketball teams... they go through cycles because they draft well. When you get to the bottom, obviously you get earlier picks in the draft. NFL is the same, and there's a real turnover. Other than the New England Patriots, who had just had this amazing run under Tom Brady, who was just a freak, and Bill Belichick, you go back to the history of the Super Bowl champions. There's a lot of turnover in different clubs or different teams playing. Whereas if you look at the NRL in the 23 years that we've been an NRL competition. The Roosters or Melbourne have been in 17 grand finals.
Mm.
In some cases, they've played each other. But those two clubs have been in 17 of the 23 grand finals, which would show you that there is either they're doing a magnificent job, which they are, but it's also tough. When you're at the top, it's easier to stay there than in other leagues.
And in the like the AFL, I don't watch the AFL, but I have noticed that the draft thing is a entertainment thing. It's a draw card in itself.
Well, we saw West.
But it doesn't mean that every club gets to play in grand finals either. You know, you look at the Melbournes and you look at some other clubs, and they've been down the bottom for a long, long time.
Bad decisions going. But you also saw GWS make the grand final a couple of years ago, because when they entered the competition, they were allowed extra draft picks, and they had certain advantages in the draft. And they went out and they picked a cracking group of young kids who took a little bit of time, because obviously they needed to mature. But when they did mature, they got the GWS to the grand final a couple of years ago.
The only thing I would disagree with the draft is, you know, a young kid like Matty Bowen that grows up in Hopevale, a great little Aboriginal community, might have had to go play in Melbourne or the Canberra Raiders, and he doesn't get to inspire the people from where he's from, or the Laurie Dalys, or, you know, a Darren Lockyer or Tim Roma has to go and play at Penrith.
Yep.
So, you know, there's pros and cons, and then, you know, you're thinking you're going to play at Brisbane and you get traded and you got to go play at Perth or whatever it is. I don't think that's fair on the players as well, but there's got to be some sort of happy medium so the competition's a little bit fairer.
Well, yeah, but Gordon, you're also a professional. Like, let's be honest. If you, like, if our work said to us, mate, you've got to go and work here and transferred me to another, you know, and it did happen to me when I was a young kid in the workplace, got told, mate, I've got to go over and work at that paper now.
At the Bankstown Torch.
Yeah, late Macquarie Gazette, you know what I mean? Like, you got told you had to do it, yeah. And had no choice about it.
Mm.
And if I didn't like it, then I could quit. And that was the reality. And look, when you're getting paid six-figure sums, I think you got to have a little bit of sacrifice there as well. I don't think you can always want it my way. Well, I want to play here and that's it. I think that the draft is a good idea. I think that it works well in the AFL. I think that there would be an ability for teams to be able to draft their way out of problems and actually start getting some good recruits. And look, you can wheel
but
and deal.
You still need someone smart there to do it, Paul.
Yeah, you do.
Like, you need someone to look at the roster, like the Moneyball type of system where they get it right.
But you also look at, say, a club like the Raiders who had real troubles hanging on to star players. Let's remember, they had Milford there who was flying at the time and he left. Todd Carney. But, you got blokes like they signed James Tedesco.
Yeah.
He signed the contract to play for Canberra and then Robbie Farah convinced him to – remember he had that two-week period you could backflip?
The cooling off period, yeah.
So he exercised that to stay where he was at. So they
Josh Dugan was a local junior there.
Trouble keeping all these players. Some of them they let go. But the point is the way the Raiders were able to get out of it was to actually go into England – where they got value for money. Because the salary cap's all about value for money. And if you're a team like the Raiders, or right now, North Queensland are going to become one of those teams. And you look, the West Tigers have become one of those teams. When they have to go and buy talent to get out of their problems, but they've got to pay overs all the time to get there. And because you're paying overs, you're never getting your salary cap healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why it just perpetuates this problem you've got.
I think it's taken about 15 years, it feels like, in a fair income department, Paul, about 10, 15 years for NRL clubs to get their head around a salary cap and how they've got to manage it. Because you now even hear the person on the street in the pub or the club saying, oh, you know, it's a salary cap thing. We've got to worry about what happens 2 or 3 years down the track. But it wasn't always like that.
No, the good clubs could manage it. Yeah, look at your club, Anthony, with South. For years they couldn't get out of it. Mm. And then Russell Crowe convinced Roy Asatasi, who was at the peak of his powers, to come over and play. And they credit Roy Asatasi with beginning the turnaround because he was the first elite player at the peak of his powers to actually sign with South. Because other than that, they were always just a superannuation fund. Yeah. You went there for a big payday in your last contract and didn't expect to win any games.
Brian Fletcher.
There you go. and then after that, they went and got Sam Burgess. So they doubled down.
Yeah.
And Sam came over and brought a new level to the club. And then through a couple of star quality players, blokes like Greg Inglis is happy to go there, and off they go. And look, if you're going to expand, yeah, the 17th team's got to get brought in. It's got to have some advantage as far as how they can sign players. The NRL doesn't have any consistent mode there. You look at when the Storm began in 98, they were helped out a lot. They got the pick of the bunch out of the Hunter Mariners who had folded. There'd been a couple other teams that did fold. Canterbury obviously helped them out a little bit there with some players there. Chris Anderson went down as coach. They had a lot of advantages in who they were able to sign. But then you look at other teams in the past, when the Raiders and the Steelers came into the competition, they were given no advantages. They weren't helped at all, and things weren't able to be – it took a long time for them to be successful.
It's frightening to think at the moment that you look at those sides that haven't been able to win a game so far this season, so the Cowboys, Manly and the Bulldogs. It's frightening to think that they are running on the same salary cap as all the other sides in the NRL.
Mm.
It shows that some clubs, when it comes to the big decisions – at those executive football levels, they're getting it wrong.
Absolutely. Yeah. Boys, let's take a break because we've got John Bomber Morris coming up, the Sharkies coach, and I know he's got a big day planned for Easter.
Before we take that break.
He doesn't look like he eats a lot of Easter eggs.
But today's his day.
Before we take that break, we just heard you put the slipper into Brian with a wife, Fletcher.
No, I did not.
About South Sydney. He's just texted just asking, was Anthony's sabbatical last week involved? I heard you talking about six-figure sums.
Right.
Did that involve a week at the Little Bay Community Radio Station.
Well, no, didn't. I did a front page appearance on the Little Bay Bugle. As you know, they did a little piece on me. But, Brian, you just work on some new material for the Brothers Ipswich gig during Magic Round. And, well, Brian, with a Y, your name is going up in lights.
The Triple M Sunday Sin Bin. Triple M rocks footy.
Welcome back once again. Happy Easter, rugby league fans right across Queensland and New South Wales, wherever you are. We're happy you're having a great Easter with your family. And they are in the Shire today because the Sharkies had a great win yesterday at Netstrata Jubilee Stadium. Here is their coach joining us, John Bomber Morris. Welcome to the Sunday Sin Bin.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Bomber, the most important question first, mate. Have you had an Easter egg yet?
I actually slipped one in early this morning, got a couple in, did a little Easter egg hunt last night when I got home from the game for the kids in the backyard. My little dog ate half of them, but managed to enjoy a couple, mate, yeah.
Good on you, mate.
Mate, great win last night. You message to the players after the game.
Yeah, Kenny, probably have reflected back on our game against Parramatta, to be honest, because I said to him after that game, you know, there was just so much to like out of that effort that the boys put in under that sort of adversity, and they were really disappointed, coming away with a loss, even though, you know, we finished the game with 13 men, but there was just so much from those coaches I liked about it, and I knew that if we can front up with that kind of effort and attitude every week that, you know, we're going to put ourselves in a position to win some games of footy, and I just think that not much has gone, you know, right for us on the field over the last couple of weeks, and I could just sense that when it did, that, you know, that things were going to change pretty quickly, and I think that was a good example yesterday. You know, we got it right. We, you know, maintained a fair share possession with the footy and defended nice and strong, and I just felt we really built on that effort from Parramatta, so I was really pleased for them.
Bomber, we'll cut straight to the hard question. Where are things up to in relation to your contract beyond this season, and how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, so I don't really know, to be honest. I haven't really had too much communication with the club. I've left it up to my management, and I guess it's quite clear that the club's, you know, taking their time to work through it, and it's a process, I guess, that I'm, you know, not going to second guess or undermine. I think that's up to them as, you know, administrators of the club to make those calls, and they've been quite public with their interest in around Craig Bellamy as well. So I think for me, it's about just focusing on the team, mate. I just really want to, you know, play it out in the media, and I just felt if I could invest all my time and energy into the team, you know, I'll get a team that's hungry and fit and is going to perform well, which is hopefully hold me in good stead to, you know, get that extension.
How do you feel though when you pick up the papers last Sunday and you see a headline where it says, you know, there'll be a decision by round 8, do you have to then go and speak to the playing group to address that, or?
No, I haven't involved the players at all, because I've got 14, 15 players off contract themselves, and I kind of made an early decision to really not let this affect the playing group. Now, I'm not quite sure if they, you know, read stuff in the background, but I just felt that, you know, if I want to make this work, I've got to let go of something, and that's me worrying about what's going on in the background. I really just got to focus on the boys, and they've been outstanding. You know, they know what's going on, but they're all, you know, you can see by their performances over the last couple of weeks of how invested they are and how sort of tight-knit we are. So, you know, I've got no issues there with the playing group. They're hungry and committed, and we're all in together, mate. As I said, there's a number of players who are off contract as well, and I've had it to be about me. And I've got a number of big names that are, you know, trying to sort their future out as well.
Hey, Johnny, talking about the players last week, the 18th man situation affected you guys against the Eels. Do you think it's a great decision to bring an 18th man onto the bench?
Yeah, good. I mean, when they were talking about it, and certainly when the AFL made their decision to bring that, engage their sub there for injury too, I didn't really know if it had its place in rugby league. But then when I saw the boys drop like flies last week, particularly early in the game and at half time, we were down to no bench. I mean, I was 3 HIAs and Sione Katoa done his knee, but you know, I had players out there in the field that were probably needed to come off as well in that second half. And I just feel if the game's going to be pretty strict with enforcing, you know, the protocols around the concussion, that they probably need to be a little bit lenient with giving us a 18th man to use. I only support it in the case that we were in. If you lose 3 HIAs, not for injury. I don't think that we need that to bring anyone else in for injury as part of the game. But certainly for the HIAs, I think it's a good idea. But whether or not that's an emerging player or someone out of your squad of 21, I think that still needs to be tidied up.
I think they left that slightly open, though, so they could get some buy-in back from the coaches and people around the game about what that should look like.
Yeah, well, Kenny, we had a chat to them during the week. They've gone around and spoke to every club, and that was my biggest thing. If I had an emerging player in that environment last week in that Parramatta game, I actually wouldn't have used him because he's not ready. Like I couldn't have put him out there in that situation where he's probably out of position, hasn't made his debut, hasn't trained with the side necessarily that week. I think I'd be detrimental to him. And that was a good. I felt that was a good point, and they took that on board. I just feel that if we're going to, I mean, they want to take away the opportunity for coaches to exploit it, but I really don't think you can with three HIAs. I think it makes sense that, you know, most teams travel with 18 or 19 men anyway, and all the time, you know, the way NRL rosters are now, normally that 18th, 19th man is someone of that emerging type, inexperienced player anyway. I don't feel that any club will be bringing in a gun rep player as your 18th or 19th man late in the game to try and exploit that rule. So hopefully they arrive at the right outcome and it's just someone in your 21-man squad.
So, mate, back to the footy, the performance of the blokes like Matt Moylan and a couple of players who are off contract and had a bit of a rough patch lately, you must be happy that you've seen to have solved the problem or the riddle of getting the go well.
Yeah, Kenny, I think we stripped it right back with Matty, and what I've loved about Matty, he's just been so honest. He knew exactly where he was at the end of last year. We had a pretty honest chat with, you know, his last 2 years, just know what we're nowhere near what he wanted to look like. His first year at the club was outstanding. He played 20 games and we played a preliminary final in 2018. And then he just couldn't get his body going right, and that affected his performance on the field. And it's kind of a downward spiral until we just changed a few things up. And I felt over the course of sort of 2019 and 20, we just, you know, as a performance team, wrapped him in cotton wool too much because we were so scared he was going to, you know, do his hemi or whatnot, that he actually did not enough training. And we just went the other direction. We put a lot of load into him. He obviously looked after himself in the off-season, which he probably was guilty of not doing the years before. And he put in a lot of work into his body, his strength, his, you know, Pilates, all sorts of stuff. And his workload over the preseason was close to double what it's been in the previous years. So, you know, the fact he's played four straight back-to-back games and, you know, scored a try yesterday, he's starting to show signs that he's on the up.
So when you've got players like Moylan and Dugan who are coming off contract themselves and obviously with your situation as it is, how do you deal with that? How are you able to plan ahead for next season and make any decisions there, or is that all getting done around you at the moment?
Yeah, Ken, that's why I think a decision needs to come pretty soon, because it is a little bit of a sticking point. Like, we do have, as I said, a number of players off contract, and we've got, you know, some there that I'd love to jump out and re-sign as soon as possible. You know, guys like the young guys, you know, the Toby Rudolphs, the Connor Tracys, Will Kennedy, you know, there's a big decision there around Shawnee Johnson, those sorts of guys. So we do have to get on the front foot. I mean, I was engaged in the Cameron McGuinness signing, but, you know, Darren Mooney's doing a great job in the background. But, I think no one's really been told as when those guys are going to be, their negotiations are going to kind of open up. So as a club, I think we need to have a look at it and move pretty quickly on it.
All right, before you go, Bomber, what about the club itself? I mean, obviously you're playing now at Jubilee Oval, which is only up across the bridge there, but what's the timeline to get the Sharkies back playing in the Shire?
Yeah, they're aiming for next year, the games to be back on PointsBet Stadium. So, you know, I'm not sure if you've been down around the club, but the amount of work that's happening around the club, it's, you couldn't open it up for an NRL game now. They've got no sort of scoreboard, no power, electricity, lights on that eastern side of the club, but they're going to aim to have it up and running in 22. Obviously, in the Leagues Club and all that precinct, commercial and residential that they're redeveloping there is probably going to be more 2023, but it's going to be beautiful down there. It's going to be a beautiful, brand-new club and a great area for the community. So, you know, we look forward to getting our games back there, but it's been been a good transition. That strata's been, it's a great venue, and you know, we had a double header there last night, and it was seamless with four teams there. I didn't hardly even see Canberra or the Titans there until they were out in the field playing. It's such the facilities they've got. So it's been a good transition. Our supporters have come on the journey with us, so hopefully we can get through this year's good winning record at Netstrata, and then we'll get back to points. But
and just one more thing, mate, before you go. I thought I heard the Fox League callers last night saying that is Teague Wilton is your nephew?
Yeah, he is actually. Yeah, he's my sister's son. So Naruma born and bred, but he got his first NRL career try last night, and his last 2 weeks he's been outstanding. So I'm really happy for him.
Good on you, mate. Good to catch up with you, and all the best for the rest of the season.
No worries, fellas. Happy Easter.
Good on you. There he is, Johnny Morris, the coach of the Sharkies in the NRL, and good to catch up with a good bloke, a 300-gamer himself, so he's no slouch.
The Triple M Sunday Sin Bin. Triple M rocks footy.
Welcome back to it, and right across Australia, happy Easter. Panthers 46, Manly 6, South 38, Dogs 0, Storm 40, Broncos 6, Sharks 48, Cowboys 10, Raiders 20, Titans 4. Today, Knights, Dragons. Tonight, Roosters, Warriors. Tomorrow, Parramatta versus the Tigers. And we'll have that game for you on Triple M. Right now, it's time for this.
From the makers of The Earth is Flat and I'm Only Having One Beer comes I Call BS.
All right, boys, I call BS on this, and I think you will agree before we go any further. What about you see these kids today playing footy? Now, a classic example last night, the Cowboys, they've been absolutely thrashed in every possible department of rugby league. They've been thrashed, and they score a late try to drag themselves into double figures. And then the guy who scores a try gets up and does this five different stage handshake with his teammate. I mean, what is that nonsense? I mean, they flick their back of their hands and they shake hands and they wave. And it's like, mate, why don't you spend less time worrying about your handshake at training and more time worrying about how to tackle?
What was your handshake back in the Waterloo Waratah days?
I can't tell you, mate. It was one we used to do at the George Hotel. I can't tell you that. Unless you were there, mate, you're a blow-in. So
like
who would like to call?
Mason.
Yes. Would you like to call BS Gordon?
This 18th man, and I heard Paul talk about it, how coaches were like rorted it. I think that there's a better chance to teach them better technique. I think that the technique's really poor with a lot of these guys, and the 18th man is not going to fix the amount of concussions that we have in a game simply because of the techniques of guys trying to tackle chest on chest. And if it's a little bit off, as we saw with Sam Burgess carrying the ball up in the 2014 grand final, there's a head clash. If you want to tackle someone up, standing up high, the only thing that's going to collide with your face is his head. So I think that there's a real chance that we got to make the targets a lot lower, and they got to start tackling, you know, pretty much around the sponsors, you know, like the old time. And then all these arguments, and I played with a bloke by the name of Tony Carroll, and he had the strongest defender in the Broncos history ever, Darren Lockyer outside him. And Tony Carroll never got fast play the balls because he just tackled with an old-fashioned technique. So that's what I'd like, and that's my BS for the day. It's not changing the rules. I think it's changing the technique to save the players from themselves.
Well, they're too busy practicing the handshakes to
change technique. Nonsense, isn't it? Anyone else like to call BS?
Dislocating their fingers.
Yeah, I'll call BS. This is a funny one. So watching the footy last night, and the Raiders winger, Jordan Rapana, throws up this captain's challenge. Yeah. And, like, for all money, he was never ever... He even had his teammates looking at him. Jared Croker's looking at him stunned, and Jack Whiten's the same. And they're looking at him like, mate, are you serious? And he's feigning and acting, and, oh, no, mate, I had eyes for the ball. I was going for the ball 100%. Yeah, no, let's challenge it. And so they wasted the challenge, and then it just got hosed out straight away. So I reckon if you're going to throw one of them up, you've got to know you're in the right.
And but that's a ploy in the game.
Is that time wasting, is it? Well, that's what I'm calling BS on Melbourne, Gordon, if that's true.
Melbourne Storm did that to David Mead the other night because I called the game, and they run past, and David, so then they run past where the ball was going to bounce. So David Mead runs into them, so they run straight past them. So there's a ploy in the game. Wherever the ball bounces, you run past it and try to block him. And that's what, you know. So that's another thing that they're coaching.
Yeah. I just want
Is that escorts? That's part. That's, oh, there's like a little that. Bit of escorts in there,
the
aren't there?
I don't know the name of it.
Paul?
Oh, I just think this whole cancel culture that we're encouraging. The Mayor Parramatta has come out that they're considering wiping out Jared Haynes' Player of the Year awards at Parramatta. The fact is, he won it. I know. Look, he doesn't have to be part of your advertising. He doesn't look if he goes to jail for what he's been convicted of. You know, he's now appealing. But if he goes to jail and it stands, the NRL's considering taking him off the Dally M's. The fact is, he won it. And you can't... You can't
rewrite history.
You can't, it's not like a person where you take out a drug cheat at the Olympics. A drug cheat at the Olympics, they got that by false means. They got that because they had an advantage.
They cheated.
Jared Hayne, look, nobody... I'm not... This is nothing that in any way of show of support for him... But you just can't do that. Like, you start doing this, where does it stop? What players, if yeah, you go back in the day of some of the antics they got up to, certainly nothing serious like that. But where does it stop?
Yeah, I know.
It's just ridiculous. I just think just move on. Like, clearly, he doesn't have to be on the posters anymore when you've got the Dally M's going or you got the Parramatta Player of the Year awards. But the fact is, he won them. You can't ever tell him when he didn't. Mm. So I just think we need to just cool down and stop being so politically correct. I know that Peter Vlanis and Andrew Abdo have this belief that that players are role models. Absolutely agree with that. But the fact is that he won it fair and square.
Yeah.
And you can't. You're actually going to draw more attention to the award and the what's the word? Like the distaste around what's happened by actually taking him out rather than just pretending, just overlooking it and glossing past it as they should be doing. So that's where I'm at.
All right, boys, a good I Call BS for everybody today. We're going to take a break. When we come back, what on earth is happening with Adam Reynolds? Is he staying at the Bunnies? Is he moving on? Well, the boys will weigh in on that. I don't know if we know any more today than we did yesterday. The Rabbitohs, of course, beat the Doggies 38-0, but we'll talk about Souths. We'll talk about Adam Reynolds. Stick with us because it's Easter. It's Sunday. You might be having a barbie and a couple of drinks and listening to us. Happy Easter, everybody. Triple M rocks the footy.
Triple M, Sunday Sin Bin. Triple M rocks footy.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.